Cuddle Teachers, welcome to episode 2. And today I'm joined by Greg Bottrell. Hi, Greg.
Hi, how are you getting on? Okay.
I'm good, thank you. I'm really good. You know, we're all coming out of COVID now, so it's nice to be going out and about. How about yourself?
Yeah, we're looking forward to Christmas and managed to stay safe, so that's the main thing.
That is the main thing, it is. So, yeah, brilliant to have you on the show today. So, we have met before. So, you did a Play 2 conference and I came and did a seminar in your conference. That was almost, I think it was a year and a bit ago, Greg, that. Was it?
It would have been. And people still talk about it now and still talk about your workshop. And, yeah, it was a really lovely kind of sprinkle of magic I felt in Devon that day.
Absolutely. I think you gathered the most amazing people. I had an awesome time there. And like you just mentioned, I still get emails from the Muddy Puddle teachers now about you, about your work. And that's what we've got you on the show today for. So if you could just introduce yourself, because I would have thought by now everybody knows who you are, Greg, if you work in early years. If they don't, then they need to get out of their hole that they've been living in. So if you could just introduce yourself and what you do.
Yeah, so I used to be an early years teacher and an assistant head in a primary school. About a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I left to go and carry the message about the magic of children, which is something that I kind of discovered in my teaching. So that's what I kind of do now. I try and see education as an adventure that we can do with children and not something that we do to them. So yeah, that's what I do, and try and support educators and parents in kind of sort of finding that door that leads to the magic.
Brilliant. And so do you train, consult, write books?
I write books. I create I struggle with the word consultant because I don't consider myself.
Sounds very medical, doesn't it?
It does. I just see myself as an adventurer, really. And if people want to come, if people want to come on that adventure with me, then fantastic, because I know what's out there, and I know there's a really special place to find. And with any adventure, you can't make people come on it. So I'm just there. I kind of sort of talk about singing the song of play, and that's kind of what I do, I guess.
So do you think teachers should be changing their names to explorers then, and adventurers? Do you think that would children feel a little bit happier at school if they felt like that was happening, an adventure?
Yeah, most possibly. I think depends kind of what adventure you're giving children, I suppose. But there is definitely a way of giving children the childhood that they deserve. I think childhood is something that I've really grown into believing in even more since having the opportunity to go and work with people. I see it play as an integral part of it, but childhood is something bigger. And it's something that we need to, it's not a choice for me, it is a moral imperative.
Yeah.
You know, you get it, children get it once.
Exactly. So do you feel that this is something that stops at early years, or do you feel that it's a whole school thing, that right up to, you know, year six really, do you think more play-based work should be done?
Oh, absolutely. It comes back to, when does childhood end? Doesn't end when you're five, so why do we end it?
It's pretty drastic in primary. I know, for obviously my background's outdoor learning, and I often get to year one and the play goes they'll have a few weeks, maybe months, up till Christmas, and then it goes, and for those children it's a massive impact on them. Massive. There seems to be no sort of transition to reducing that play at all. It's just, no, you're in year one now, that's it, stop it, you've got to grow up.
Yeah, it's very difficult. And I think it's because we're not adults. I talk very often about adults forgetting to remember. We forget to remember what it's like to be six.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we here in England, at least, have a system where the curriculum has become more important than anything else. That's not teachers' fault. That's the system that we're in. But my work is hopefully trying to show that system it isn't the be end and end all. The narrative is it that you know, oh, we're in year one, we've got lots of content to get through. Well, okay, you've got lots of content, but it doesn't mean that you can't embrace childhood and play. And in the same way, it doesn't mean you can't do it in year six. It just looks different, but it's not, you know.
I feel it's the way that we've translated the curriculum a little, though, because when I started my journey of taking things outdoors more, I didn't do the curriculum at first. It was the last thing I wanted to look at. I just thought, stuff it, I'm just going to do my own thing. But I think because I've been a teacher for so long, those objectives were in my head and I ended up naturally teaching them. But I did it in such a different way that the children didn't even realise they were doing the curriculum. So is it that we've translated it in a way and are doing it in methods that possibly are making the curriculum very stifling? Do we need to be a little bit more adventurous, take risks and do it in different ways? Because I know the impact is greater if you do take that risk.
And I think that's part of it. We often talk about, particularly with outdoor play, we talk about children taking risks, but actually more so it's the adult taking the risk. Mm. The adult taking the risk to let go.
Yeah, it's the control, isn't it?
Absolutely. And to give children freedom and choice and creativity and all the things that they're waiting to be given.
And what you've just said there, I feel absolutely is the same for the teacher. Give them the freedom and the creativity. It's the same for both, isn't it? Both sides. Yeah.
In my second book, School and the Magic of Children, I talk about this phrase, the soulification of children. And I don't use it lightly. I do believe that children, this magic is their soul. And teachers have a soul too. What's happened generically to teaching is it's become very much about schemes, whole school approaches, consistency, but it's just another word for control.
Yeah.
And that's not teachers' fault. That, no. Again, anything that I say is not, none of it is teacher bashing. It's the idea is to almost say, well, okay, so what lies beyond this? Just, you know, it goes back to things like the phonic screening test. And it is a test. It's not a check. It's a test.
It's a test, yeah.
Is that we have a duty to show children that language is a playground. It's something to play with.
Yeah.
So you can do that and enable children to pass that test without introducing alien words, which you just somehow grab out of the air and you teach them. See what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, this has impacted on me massively at the minute because my little Sienna's just done her phonics screening and she was sent all of these alien words home. And I was in year one for many years, so I did it over and over again. But she just can't get her head around it. Why, Mum? You've just taught me how to read and that words have meaning and that they have purpose. And then I present these to her and I'm like, because we have to. And I don't want to tell my child that she has to do something. She should want to do it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think part of it, particularly when we think about early years, particularly when we think about being outside, being outdoors, is trying to show children. I'm really into the idea of show, not tell.
Yeah,
I love that. Yeah, we're not there to tell children anything. Because they know about the world. If we just shut up sometimes and just listen to them, and it's not that they know, you know, like in year one, you've got to know the parts of a plant or a flower. I mean, whoever came up with that doesn't, I've said this before, and someone did actually once say, I actually met a child that was really fascinated by it. Lovely. But I've yet to meet the majority of children. No one cares. Do adults care about the names of a part of a flower?
They don't. And what upsets me even more is when they come to doing that, they do it on worksheets when there's flowers outside.
Because the adult world wants to measure.
Yeah.
And what happens is parents, and again, this is not a criticism of parents, but we as parents believe that's what education is.
Yeah.
And it suggests that there is no alternative. But there is an alternative. And do you know what? It's coming.
Yeah.
It is coming.
I feel there is.
The accountability crew have had their day, that slowly we're beginning to see that, you know, ultimately it's all of it's about what learning looks like.
I think we're starting to see the teachers get more confident and choose their style of teaching. And I think that's why, I mean, we call ourselves a tribe of the Muddy Puddle teachers. We all think alike. And for us, the outdoors is our platform because we feel that we aren't assessed on a perfect lesson outside, because you can't be, that we can move away from those indoor sort of habits and we're not criticised for it because we're outside and we're doing everything that is appropriate for the outside space. And I do think that's why a lot of my teachers like outdoor learning, because of that freedom, because of that creativity. And we know that there's so many more other impacts for that. But I think it's the teachers are really starting to take on board, they're connecting. And although I'm not a massive fan of children or adults being on technology too much, Facebook has allowed for connection. I wouldn't have met you without Facebook, without being able to connect. I wouldn't have been able to show my work without having Facebook. And I think they're getting a voice and a confidence that actually what they've been saying for a long time about education, there's all of us are saying the sort of same thing, and they're so passionate about it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think part of it is, I mean, in a way, being outside and electronics, for example, kind of weirdly give children the same thing. They give them freedom from adults. And because, you know, when you're on a computer game, you're in the computer game. You're not in the adult, you know, you're not in the adult world of expectation.
Yeah.
Now, it's not to say that when you're outside, you don't have expectations, but there is more freedom for children to, and you use the word connection. Connection's massive for me, it is anyway. And I hope it would be for teachers, is we want to connect authentically with children. Because if we don't, why are we teaching?
Exactly.
And, you know, and I think part of that is just beginning to challenge the model that's been with us for 150 years and really just needs sweeping away.
Yeah.
Because it's not, you know,
it hasn't changed much, has it?
No.
Sorry, repeat that again, Greg.
No, that's not to say that it can't. And it's you know, it's like, it's people like you. I see you guys as, you are play people.
Yeah.
And it's the play people that we just need to keep pushing and advocating childhood and freedom and choice and creativity, collaboration, all the things that children need that are not separate from learning, because they don't have to be.
No. I think the lockdown process as well had a big impact, because I think teachers were expecting the children to come back a lot. Their levels dipped a lot, and it hasn't really. And maybe it has for some, but not as drastically as what they thought it was going to be. And I think that's taught us a lot. That's taught us that naturally children are progressing, even when they're not in a school setting. I think a lot of parents did the work at first and then got fed up with the worksheets. That's a time where we became very popular, because parents were looking to alternative work. And I think we've definitely had a moment of reflection here whereby the normal processes and things that we've had in place just don't always need to be there. I always say that the best practice is happening in early years. And I think this is a time also for early years to start showing year six and the key stage twos, you know, really how you can make play and creative learning make an impact with that. What do you think about that, Greg?
I completely agree. And that's why, in a way, I've become more fascinated with the concept of childhood, because with play, the adult world doesn't really understand it. And in a way, rightly so, because it doesn't belong to them. We had our moment of play, which doesn't mean that we don't still play now, but as in that real, rich, imaginative world, that magic that we were once in as children. We've had that time as child, you know, in childhood. And it's easy to dismiss it there when we say play, because it just sounds trivial. And we have a system that says you work and then the reward is play. You work 5 days a week or however long, your reward is the weekend. And then you're back, you know, or then you get the pay packet and that's what you work for. But actually with play isn't that trivial. Play, you know, there's that play is the work of childhood. Well, it absolutely is. And we can't, that's why I'm really keen on bringing it back to childhood, because then it's the case of going, okay, so when does it end? Yeah. If you're saying to me it ends at six, go and tell the parents that that's what you believe their childhood ends. Yeah. So we have to challenge these things, and it's challenging on a really emotional level, because I've yet to meet a teacher, even in secondary school, that will say childhood ends at the age of 11. because it doesn't.
No,
it really doesn't.
I would hope that it never ends, really. I think what I get really interested in sometimes is, especially in sometimes I get workplaces that will ask me to come and help their staff use the outside space to feel better. And I get there and I think, why can't employees have fun? You know, I think, why is it that we've got to have this separate thing where they get to have a laugh and a giggle together? Why aren't they having a laugh and a giggle at work? Why is wellbeing not a place here? You know, and I think of my children, I think when they become adults, I still want them to have fun and be happy. And yeah, it's like what you're saying, this childhood, you know, we need it to be fun and happy and free, because that's their well-being. That's how we're building them up as happy people. And if they get in a job and they're miserable, then what life is that for anyone? You know, they're really intelligent but miserable. Great. I don't think any parent, like you said, wants that either. We want, always, we will all say the first thing we want is happy children.
Absolutely. And part of the narrative around well-being has become, well, you work really hard and then you get the well, then you look for solutions to the well-being. But yeah, actually, why don't we begin to look at what we're actually doing in the work? And, yeah, and it's that thing of, you know, just schlecking learning on and almost crowbarring it into children. It's not much joy in that. You just end up getting frustrated with children because they don't want to, you know, you sit them at the table, you give them a sentence starter and that they don't care about, and neither do you. You just want to, but it's true.
It's true.
So you're sat in a room where no one actually cares. Well, then you are going to need more well-being, because all that's going to happen is you're going to be under pressure.
Yeah.
And so it's that thing of, and again, it goes back to the adult world. It goes back to expectations of teachers, which often they're not in control of. I mean, I've just been on a forum where someone was saying that an expectation in reception was children writing six sentences with neat handwriting, grammar and correct spellings now. And you just think, well, to me, I commented on it and said, well, that's actually technically a failure of the teacher standards. Because it's not understanding that part of the inadverted commas curriculum.
Yeah.
So all this pressure gets put on children as if somehow more earlier is better, but it's not.
No, it really isn't.
And
sometimes it's time, isn't it? It is time. You know, I know with my own children who learn completely differently, you know, I can see they're not getting something, and rather than shoving it down their throat, I just leave it for a bit and we'll come back to it. And surprise, surprise, 3-6 months down the line, they've got it. And it's the same with children in your class sometimes. It's very different with children in your class, like you're just saying, than it is your own children. I can put it down and pick it up later. Mm-hmm. But when you are in the classroom and you've got a child that's not able to do something, you can't use that mentality, because you've got to be constantly showing that you're there in, you know, nurture groups or blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know, that child's then failing every single time, failing because they're just not ready to do it. And it's sad that. It's very sad.
And what can happen there is it can lead to play deficit, because what we end up doing is the government have rolled out this language program, which of course just then is ultimately a commercial thing because of the marketization of education in this country. So then everyone's squabbling about a contract to get, you know, language. And ultimately it's then your TA taking groups of children away from play.
Yeah.
Go and sit and talk about things that you don't care about because it's just off a script, looking at pictures that is, and just somehow try, but actually play next door. That's got all the language you can possibly want and more.
Absolutely, yeah. I do find that going outside does push children to talk more. There's so much more happening around them, and because the scenery changes, it's fascinating. I mean, we've just had a couple of our teachers doing a bit of a research project about speech and language outside, and it's fascinating what they've come back with some of their maybe more reluctant children to talk, really being expressive. But there's also an element with that as well with talk, is that just some people don't want to talk as much as others. Just because you're chatty and loud doesn't mean that you're then going to progress to be this, you know, I mean, what do we want children to be? I just want them to be happy personally, but it doesn't progress anything. You know, if someone's quiet and reserved, that's okay, isn't it?
Absolutely. And again, that whole thing of being outside is, it comes back to belonging, which is what the connection bit is children feeling that they belong in that sort of, I mean, I talk about a shared space. So it's their space and your space that this co-adventure can happen together, that you are, and you're authentically sharing the joy of language, not so that children can then become better readers. And that's not saying that we don't have ambition for children to be readers, but it's that whole thing of like, well, you know, there is an early learning goal and they've got to get that. Otherwise, because you know what's going to happen if they don't get it, they are doomed to intervention probably throughout the whole of their school, you know. And I've seen it in my own career where, you know, it's the afternoon for PE or it's the afternoon to go outside.
Yeah.
And what happens? Oh, this group need to come and do extra this. And, and so then it leads to, A, the separation of the solidarity of play, which is massive and natural and is the, that is the home of language. Children sharing ideas, sharing thinking. Just like you said, almost some children are quiet, but within play, play itself is a language where you don't have to always be talking. You know, quiet can be, sometimes quiet is a good, you know, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because you have to learn, don't you, when to speak.
When to speak.
But what your role is as well, what is your role within the community that of 30 children that you're in? Because you see that, don't you, where some children step forward in one bit of play, then they step out again, other children come in, which again goes back to when you're outside. It's brilliant because red, blue, blue group, yellow group, all that goes out the window. And now we're back into how children should be.
Yeah.
And my thing is, and all the work that you guys do, is to me, it's like saying, okay, so that's great outdoors. Let's bring that indoors too. How can that, how can we make, because I talk about a universe, it's both inside and outside, almost, they're not identical, but the pedagogy, the philosophy and how we see childhood should be exactly the same. So how, if they're free outside, what about the freedom inside? And I think that's a real challenge.
I think it is. I think what we've been trying to do a lot more as well is just is switch that thinking a little bit, you know, because with the outside space, they tend to go, well, we've done our work. And like you said, let's go outside and have fun now. And it's sort of like when the children start to go outside, they don't see that as learning. They see that as playing, which is absolutely brilliant. But it is a learning space. And we try and think outside in, start with the outside and bring that in, because that is going to inspire everything that you do by being outside. Coming inside can really inspire your work that you do. And I often speak, you know, for the older children as well in that respect, where they sometimes in particular, they'll go, right, the kids are getting, you know, a bit intense, we'll go outside and have a play. And it's like, you know, if you'd really started your day being outside, the children probably wouldn't be feeling so intense right now because they had that energy, they needed that energy to go outside. So yeah, brilliant. Thank you, Greg. I just want to draw your attention to one more thing. So teacher well-being has been a big thing on the Muddy Puddle forums at the minute. A lot of them are feeling, because COVID has been had a massive impact on them. And surprisingly, observations are still happening and Ofsteds are still happening and they're still required to do this and that. I think a lot of them are feeling the struggle at the minute. What are your thoughts on the outside space for the teacher as well? Because I think it has a massive impact. But...
Well, again, it goes back to that idea of it being the shared space, that it is yours as well as the children's. I'm a real advocate of co-playing, and co-playing is whereby you are the play equally to the children. You're not interfering.
Yeah.
You're just the play. You're in with them, and you, when you're around them, they know something good is going to happen. I talk about the world of good things. The children are the world of good things, so are you, and you are in the world of good things. And so the idea being is when children, wherever children are, so let's say outside, is we go into their magic. We go and, you know, sometimes what can happen, I talk about the diminishing circles of learning. It like the carpets almost like becomes this is the place where we learn, then the table's the next bit, and then you go outside and it's getting less, and you know what I mean? The learning thing, like you just said, you know, most children go outside to get away from the adults, I'm joking, but like you could say some do, don't they? They just go the furthest away from what represents learning, which is the carpet. And part of that is, you know, crikey, this has been, it's been an extraordinary time But is it, what's even more extraordinary is that the adult world cannot let go of lesson observations and this accountability culture. It just, it's like, it's got literally cannot, it's completely blind to what's going on. And it, to me, and I'm going to use this word, and I don't mean it in a comical way, but it is laughable. We've got to start seeing it for just how ridiculous the system is. And it's that bit, to me, is where it might not give us joy at the minute, but we've got to begin to show parents somehow that what they think education is ultimately is a lie.
Yeah.
They're upset it, because it is. They're being lied to. It is not, it's got nothing to do with a phonic screening check.
Do you think they've had that reflection process now that they've had that time to have to home learn, though? Do you think they've seen how laborious it is for their children doing this sort of, you know, sat down? Because I don't think any of us parents could get our kids to sit down for very long to do the work. So how on earth, why on earth are they doing it at school? That's what I was thinking for my own. I just thought that I could see, you know, we were given all of this work, and obviously I had other minds for it. So ours just went to one side and we just went outside and did it on walks and things like that, and had a real adventure, like you said.
Yeah, I think the part of it is just trying to work as best as can. And I think this is kind of the work that I'm trying to do, the work you're trying to do as well, is saying, do you know what? It's really tough. It's really tough being a teacher. Where can we find the joy? Where, how can we look at things slightly differently? How can we support you to do that? You know, it is, you know, teaching is really, you know, teaching has always been a really hard thing.
Yeah.
But it's this whole thing of looking underneath the narrative that you get told all the time. Like, for example, rates of literacy have not improved since the 1920s in the UK. They're no better than they were they have not improved. And so, and we talk about social mobility, and we talk about people, you know, being able to do X, Y, and Z, but is that really what it's about? I don't know. You know, is it this whole thing about the consumerism and finance?
What you're saying, it's, you know, what is the end goal? What is the end goal of all of this? Are we looking at the end goal? Are we trying to look better than other countries? Are we, you know, what is our end goal? We need to look at ourselves, really, and decide on what it is that we want for children and their lives and their upbringings. And surely they've got a choice in that as well.
And that's where it comes back to me. That's where it comes back to dropping childhood into the mix of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And saying, okay, so how can we give children a childhood? How do we embrace outdoor play? How do we embrace phonics? How do we embrace language and try and do it in a different way than what we are being, what we have been told to do?
Yeah.
It's a little bit like book ban books.
Oh my goodness, Dawn. I'm still having nightmares about book ban books.
But they've been around for years. And most children, they are the most boring thing. Reading is a gift that we should be giving to children.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you know it's boring for the very reason that I've yet to meet a teacher at the end of the day that ever says, I've got a great idea, let's read a guided reading book. You don't.
No.
There's no joy in it. They said the teacher knows but can't do anything about it. So it's all one big muddle.
It is. It really is. I know. And it's like what you said, it's traditions, isn't it? It's changing society, and society can't change overnight. And it comes back to what you say, and I say exactly the same all the time, Greg, is we're showing them, not telling them. You know, we both go out there and we practically show them. I know how hard it is as a teacher to go to these training sessions, you hear these inspiring people tell you all these amazing things, and you go, well, how do I do it then? And you need to give me some ideas, and I've got time of day to do it. But yeah, it's giving them those ideas as well of how to do it and changing mindsets, absolutely. What we're really proud of at the minute is that we've got more than ever schools that are doing outdoor learning right up till key stage two, and them trying to balance the indoors with outdoors and doing exactly what you're saying, trying to give those children more play, more time out of the classroom, because at the minute that's how they're managing it, that's how they're incorporating more play, is by going outside, because the distractions aren't there, there's no observations, you know, to look at, there's no books to mark. That's what I find when I'm outside, my head feels so much clearer. And I tend to engage with the children so much more because nothing else out there other than to engage with the children more.
Yeah, and there's many, many schools that are doing that. You know, we mustn't lose sight of that. There are, you know, many teachers out there who are really striving to give children something absolutely magical every day. You know, you see lots of evidence, but there is also a bulk of, you know, there's still a culture where that is still the minority.
Yeah.
And my thing is, if you choose play for one child, you choose it for all children. You're making a statement about what you value in children. Yeah. So if you think that a sentence starter about a hungry caterpillar that no one cares about is for your red group, you're saying that for all children. Yeah. It's beyond just the children that you. That's how I see it, and it's trying to reconnect teachers and parents to the world that lives within you. Why did you become a teacher in the first place? Because it's very easy. You know, we all did it when we're an NQT. We're like, woohoo! Come on, let's change the world.
Yeah,
it doesn't take long before you realize that's probably not going to happen anytime soon.
And it's so sad, isn't it? It's so sad, you know, because I do a lot of work with the teachers and they ask me lots of questions. I get lots of emails about their support. And my support is always never to leave it. Don't leave your job. Don't go somewhere else. You've got to try and support their thinking, because that's why a lot are leaving. Not because of the stress, not because of the hard work or any of that. We all know what hard work is. That's fine. It's because their thinking has changed. And it seems to happen at the 10-year point. They get to 10 years teaching and then they start to, because this is the process, isn't it? We're intelligent human beings and we're learning our role, we're becoming experienced, and our thinking starts to develop. And it seems to be at this 10 years gap that they get there and they start to go, you know what, actually there needs to be more focus on the well-being of the child. Stop calling them a statistic, stop pushing them too much. And I find that fascinating, the emails that I get, if I'm honest.
But that's where your role is really critical. You know, and it is it comes back to joy. There is joy to be found. There absolutely is joy to be found. It's just trying to show one another how to find them. Because in any job, you know, I used to work in mental health before I was a teacher. And, you know, it was the same thing. There was always a culture of accountability and pressure. And, you know, it's teaching's no different to many jobs. You know, it's hard. Mm-hmm. But it's that thing of, you know, there are alternatives. You can open up the doors and go outside, and you can still do all the maths you will ever need to teach. Yeah. I talk about the early years pocket, which is all, you know, all the stuff you pick up at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Like, you know, in that pocket is the whole curriculum, in inverted commas. All learning is in that pocket.
Yeah.
If we allow it to come to us, because it's there. All learning's in the world.
Absolutely.
And it's even more so when you go outside.
Absolutely. 100%. Well, thank you, Greg. I'm not going to take up much more of your time. That was really powerful conversation. Thank you. I think the muddy teachers are going to... What's that, sorry?
And hopefully not too negative. I feel like I've been really negative there. I hope I haven't.
No, I don't. I think you've given me hope. I think that was a very hopeful conversation. I think sometimes you can feel like you're being really negative because you're trying to make change, and that feels, I think that feels negative, but it's not, it's positive. It's one of those things, isn't it? You're trying to make change, and when anybody feels change, that feels negative at first. But it's the positivity we're going to get into, isn't it? And it's just about saying these things and giving hope to our teachers who know all of this. And when they hear you speak and say what you're saying, it makes them go into work the next day believing in themselves again. Because a lot of teachers are going in not believing in themselves and feel a failure and all of these things because they're not doing what they're being told to do. But actually what they're doing is the right thing.
Absolutely.
So I think that was very hopeful and positive. So... Thank you. So final thing is, if people want to get in touch or get your books, hear more about you, could you just give them some links to where they can find you?
Yeah, all my work's on my website, which is canigoandplaynow.com. I'm on Facebook as well. Can I Go and Play Now? It's got a Facebook page, and on Instagram and Twitter, the usual sort of social media things.
Let them know about the names of your books again.
Oh, yeah. So the first book is Can I Go and Play Now?
You must go get that.
Yeah. And the second book is School and the Magic of Children.
They'd be perfect presents for teachers too.
I'd hope so. And I'm hoping in the new year, I've got various things that are emerging. I'm hoping are going to be, I'm kind of calling it the tsunami of joy. It's a key word, and it's for children. Like we said, it's for children and adults. So, you know, I'm hoping to release various things that are going to really try and give us some energy.
Yeah.
It'd be exciting, I hope.
Brilliant. Well, thank you, Greg. Thank you ever so much. And have a wonderful day. And hopefully we'll get you back on again soon sometime. So thank you ever so much.